This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Gauteng and FMR in Cape Town.
Well, as the cleanup begins in earnest with the appointment of new NDPP Shamila Batohi this month, and we continue to hear testimony from the various commissions that have been established to really lay bare the extent of state capture, I think the important role of the whistleblowers has risen to the top of the agenda. We heard how two whistleblowers who lifted the lid on the Guptas and how they, with the help of former President Jacob Zuma and his son Duda Zaini and some senior cabinet ministers, captured the state. And those whistleblowers are now living in hiding and have started new lives outside of the country. That was Brian Curran, who's a state witness, telling the Zondo Commission that the country owes these two men a huge debt. Had it not been for their bravery, the rot and scale of state capture would never have been fully exposed. So how do we go about supporting the whistleblowers while also weeding out the disgruntled former employee with an axe to grind in all of this? Well, let's welcome tonight's panellists. On the line, I've got David Lewis, Executive Director of Corruption Watch. Evening, David. Thanks for joining us.
Hello.
And in studio, Brian Hutting, founder of exponential leadership firm SICAN. Brian, great to see you again.
Good evening, Michael. Nice to be here.
And also on the line, we've got Fefolafi Dube, who's a constitutional law expert and independent legal consultant. Fefolafi, welcome.
Good evening. It's Pepelapi.
Pepelapi, sorry about that. Thanks for correcting me. David, how important are whistleblowers in the fight against corruption and turning the ship around?
Well, there's no successful prosecution, certainly, of corruption case without whistleblowers. You know, it's very rare that some, you know, random member of the public should have sight of what is going on in a corruption case. Usually the whistleblower is somebody who is in the room in serious case of corruption. And, you know, I think South Africans are probably also going to have to start getting used to the fact that while some whistleblowers are real citizen heroes, other whistleblowers are not necessarily the kind of people you want to meet in a dark alley, quite honestly. And they're usually people who have been complicit in the act of corruption itself, which is an exchange between two equally guilty parties. So it takes a lot of strange things to get one of the guilty parties to blow the whistle, and it's usually either because he fears fears prosecution, or because he fears that his co-conspirator is about to blow the whistle on him. And so I think, as in the case of Agrizi, he gets in first. But it's also necessary for citizen whistleblowers to speak out, and these are the people who report experiences of corruption to us at the rate of about 150 reports a week. And they're, you know, as I say, usually real heroes, and they should be treated as such.
And those are the heroes I want to focus on, Pepelapi, for a little bit longer, because the law is meant to protect the whistleblowers who come forward to report corruption. At this stage, certainly seem to fail. They fail to shield them from harassment, from intimidation, or even from legal action. And that's not me saying it. That's according to two of the most high-profile whistleblowers who were speaking at Daily Mavericks, the gathering in Cape Town last year. And they just said that when it comes to whistleblowing protection, the law is failing our whistleblowers. Would you agree? Where could we improve protecting those brave citizen heroes who come out to expose corruption?
Well, yes, I would agree with the general sentiment that there would appear to be insufficient protection for whistleblowers for a variety of reasons. I think, first of all, there could be perhaps a general misunderstanding of the whistleblowing legislation, that's the Protected Disclosures Act, in the sense that it does, in a sense, try to achieve a balancing act between, on the one hand, maintaining, you know, the institutional integrity, and on the other hand, encouraging whistleblowing. So in the sense that, for example, whistleblowers have to, first of all, make use of internal mechanisms in the Whistleblowing Act. And if there's no joy, then that's only when they approach other sources. So other organizations, for example, you know, Corruption Watch, for example, the Human Rights Commission. And that's really in an attempt to ensure that, you know, employees that have an axe to grind aren't out there trying to do damage to certain organizations. And, you know, in the run-up to elections, you know, you might have individuals who have certain axes to grind with certain political parties. So there are those inbuilt protection measures that are in place. But I think on the other hand, if we compare, for example, with countries such as Ghana, where they have similar legislation, but they've gone a step further in that the assumption is that a whistleblower needs to be protected. So from the moment a whistleblower makes a protected disclosure, then they receive police protection because the assumption is that, hang on, this is an individual who is putting their life at risk and for the greater good of the country, and they need to be protected. Whereas South African legislation doesn't have those kinds of inbuilt protections that are in place. But I think another point is I think particularly in the last 9 years, where there's been a decimation of certain key state institutions, which has left a lot of whistleblowers in a very vulnerable position because there hasn't been the expected response or the expected protection from these key institutions. So, for example, we've seen the infiltration of the state security agency by individuals who were connected to the former president. And it would have made the position of whistleblowers, it left them in an untenable position because they wouldn't have, they lacked protection. And I think the same was true for the South African Police Service as well as the National Prosecution Authority Act. So I think, just to conclude that, I think we do have, you know, a progressive piece of legislation, but it doesn't go far enough. And that particular piece of legislation is also dependent on other key institutions of state for its proper functioning.
As you mentioned, you know, no law would be able to protect someone where key institutions designed to protect the citizenry have been repurposed to protect the very looters whom the citizenry are trying to blow the whistle on. Brian, there is, though, this continued negative perception of those who speak out about wrongdoing, and it does seem perverse because many who raise concerns do so out of a desire to do the right thing. And obviously Agritsi might not be the perfect example here. We know he was complicit, and you know, he's subsequently been arrested out on bail, but it surely just makes good sense that those who lead organizations should also welcome and encourage employees to do this, to make it easier for employees to do this.
So let's start with the fact that perception is reality, and how people perceive the world is their world for them, even though it might not be the reality. I think what we've seen with over the last 10 years is such a dramatic defibrination, carcinogenic defibrination of the fabric of our government and even into business and private sector, and certainly in the parastatals. And so to the man in the street or the bystander, it looks daunting. The whole concept of whistleblowing, I think, is a misnomer. It should be given a much more positive name, like truth-sayers or truth-proponents or whatever you'd like to call it, truth-champions. These are people who should be celebrated. And we're leaving out the guys who are blowing the whistle because they've seen the train smash coming and they want to make sure that they possibly get the best possible exit. They might not get off scot-free, but they might get away with some whole lot less than what they might. So let's look at the people who do it. You know, in a society where, you know, a breach of road ordinances has gotten to such a dramatic level. I mean, the number of people I watched through going through traffic lights, red traffic lights, and all the rest of it. We've seen this thing cascading. And so it's really important that I think we should celebrate it. And I think if we look at the fact that political values are based on social values, which in turn are based on individual values, and ethics, which we speak of, are values being actualized. So let's start with the individual values. Let's start creating tipping points within communities, within whether it be businesses. Let's start with right mindset, right heart set, and rewarding people. Let's have rewards once a year for the most authentic act or the most authentic employee or one of those things. Just to start creating a consciousness of that by doing right, you're doing best by all. Because by delaying the process of whistleblowing, the knock-on effects extrapolate. If you blow the whistle early, like a cancer, if you get it in at grade zero, you can possibly get it fixed up really easily. Leave it till it's grade four, you're possibly going to die. Exactly the same in businesses and the government. When it's extrapolated to that extent, now the fix-up that we're asking to do is that much more complex.
And I think what we're seeing to that point, and David, if you could jump in here, is because we've seen more and more whistleblowers coming out being accountable and standing on the right side of history. More and more we're seeing the likes of, and I think of Victor Siani at the PIC, a fairly junior employee, but saying this far, no further, and coming out and giving his version of events. It is about celebrating that ethical culture. Where do we start to recalibrate as a society? You know, Rudy Giuliani, when he wanted to fix up New York, said start with the small stuff, the broken windows. Do we need to go back to basics and really start hammering the bylaws to get people to really respect the rule of law again?
Yeah, you know, well, you're talking. I agree with what Brian has said, is that individuals need to be celebrated. In fact, very often the best protection for whistleblowers is high profile, and you know where they are treated as heroes in their firm or in their community, and where they are rewarded for doing the right thing. That often is the best protection that they can get. You know, on a societal level, you're talking about, you know, behavior change at a very, very grand scale. And I think that it's possible. I mean, you know, we went through it, for example, on the condomize issue during the HIV/AIDS epidemic. And you know, that worked to quite a significant degree. It is a more focused area in which you want to change behavior, but it was an important area and it worked. You know, I think, you know, if you had a decent government communications service, which we don't particularly, but if we did, and or if people who were, and institutions who were expert in public communications were brought on board, and you ran a massive campaign about corruption, about the heroism of whistleblowers and those sorts of things, you can start changing behavior, but it does take an enormous concerted effort and enormous resources, obviously not enormous relative to the scale of damage that corruption causes, but it is possible to do that, and I think that one has to think about doing that. I mean, in institutions like businesses, just as in government, it also depends enormously on, you know, what is, you know, called the tone from the top, you know, which is why we have had such a problem in government and political parties. But, you know, equally in companies, I mean, whistleblowers are tremendously disillusioned, for example, when they report something and they actually visibly see it being swept under the carpet. They see nothing being done about it because the person upon whom they've, in relation to whom they've blown the whistle, are too powerful to have anything done to them. And that's an enormous discouragement to whistleblowing. But I mean, the truth is, you know, hearing, you know, what is said about our protected disclosure legislation, it only protects people from detriment, as it's called, in their employment relationship. It's very hard to protect people, you know, if they're really blowing a whistle on very serious corruption, from physical harm, people from ostracization, except, as I say, by treating them as heroes and by being seen to be treated as heroes. But it always takes a certain amount of courage and civic commitment to blow the whistle, and there's going to be no avoiding that in a way. I mean, in the United States, for example, I think it's the Securities and Exchange Commission. People pay, they pay a bounty for whistleblowing, a very large share of the amount of monies that are recovered as a result of it. And that's something that we could consider, although it has its own problem.
I mean, one does create all sorts of ethical questions around motivating people to blow the whistle for financial gain versus the ethical duty. But Brian, you know, ethics, when we talk about it, it starts where the law ends, actually. As David Lewis was saying, very difficult to provide protection via the law, but certainly to encourage the societal protection and celebration is something that we can do. How can organizations, how can businesses encourage this? Start to encourage this open culture of whistleblowing or truth-saying, whatever you want to frame it as.
Well, I'm going to start by saying that culture is simply the way we do things around here. It's by example. And I don't know if you have children, but children, we don't inform children, we form them. We form them by the example we set, the love that we show them. And if what we say matches what we do, they'll internalize it and then live it out. There's a fantastic example of Paul Kagame of Rwanda, who introduced the Umugunda rule, which is that every Saturday of the last Saturday of the month, everybody, shops closed, everybody down stools, and everybody, including the president, picks up litter. Rwanda is now one of the cleanest countries in the world. And even though there's a bit of gripe from some shopkeepers because shops stay closed till 11 o'clock, police wander around and make sure that everybody does their Umugunda duties. And the beautiful comment from a number of the people, a man in the street said, albeit it's law, it's actually now lifestyle. So it's interesting how a legislation like that can bring about a whole social change and reorganization. Similarly, inside of organizations, I think that how the leaders operate, the vision that they set, and the authenticity with which they operate, that they can seem to be consistent. You know, it's all about character. It's not about charisma or personality. It's about character. And characters are out the stuff. It's about Martin Luther King Jr. put it beautifully. He said, the measure of a man is not where he stands in times of comfort and complacency, but in times of controversy and challenge. And that's when character gets emerged, and that's when people stand up and heroes can be counted.
That's certainly not an area that lends itself pepperlapi to the law in particular, but speaking to what companies can do and to encourage this culture of whistleblowing, of telling the truth, of standing up to powerful figures, it's easier said than done. If you're a new employee, for example, and you're surrounded by seniors, you ask a question in the board meeting or the management meeting, and you quickly get shut up. And the culture starts from the very top and feeds its way down. What advice would you have for businesses to start opening their culture up and to be part of the positive winds of change that we want to see so desperately in this country?
I think you're quite right to bring the conversation to businesses, in the sense that I think we've been far too focused on what's happening in the public sector. But I think the last couple of years, you know, especially when you talk about McKinsey, when you talk about Bain, I think
KPMG.
There are... Yes, KPMG, and at the moment, you know, we're talking about the PIC as well. So I think, you know, there are enough examples from the private sector where there's been, you know, flagrant violation of, you know, corporate governance principles, which have in some instances led to obvious criminality. But it is important really for businesses to align their core values and to align their principles and their practices with, you know, proper ethics. So right now we've got, you know, the for example, you know, the King report, you know, the King 4, which does outline certain principles of corporate governance, which if one looks applies a longer lens to it, are, you know, kind of aligned to the Constitution insofar as the Constitution talks about values of transparency and accountability and openness. And I think it's really about time that more businesses it's really about time that the private sector was more in tune with these values and really lifted it and for us, you know, as individuals, to also have, you know, the same demand of accountability that we have with the on the public sector to also have the same demands on the private sector as well.
And Per Philippi, I agree with you. When we talk, and Helen Ziller, the Premier of the Western Cape, tweeted about a tax revolt, but if we want to take the higher ground as business, as citizens, then we need to be walking the talk. We can't just be flinging mud and throwing stones. We have to be able to demonstrate that as business leaders, we are setting the right example and therefore demand that accountability from the public sector, Brian.
The exponential world is demanding self-aware, inclusive type leaders who have a coaching style of leadership. Command and control, whilst it still remains in certain domains and certain industries, is something that's not going to work. So the more that we can have inclusion, the more that we can incorporate the hearts and minds of the people in the organization, the more that we are ensuring that we're setting out to add value and to make a difference. And us, the narcissists and the sociopaths as leaders, and bring in the people who actually have a concern and a care for the world that we're in and for the community that we're in, and have good win-win negotiations and good practice, leave something on the table for the next man, that immediately starts to instill a different type of behavior and ethic inside of the workplace.
And we can start moving away from the Trumpian style of leadership that we are seeing all over the world. That'll probably keep us going for another hour. Brian Hutting, founder of exponential leadership firm Sycan, thank you very much as well to Pepa Lapi Dubey, constitutional expert and independent legal consultant, and David Lewis, executive director of Corruption Watch, for joining this panel on supporting the whistleblower. Well, thanks for tuning in to the show tonight. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter at Classic1027, at Fine Music Radio, or just follow the hashtag Classic Business. We're also now available on Spotify, so you can get our podcasts on Iono, Spotify, and Apple iTunes. Thank you very much to our head of technical, Gaz Cherry, for that. Dynamite certainly comes in Sylvia A-size packages. Up next for you in the lounge for our Cape Town listeners, and in Gauteng, Carolyn Staines at Classic Cocktails, as she celebrated her wedding anniversary yesterday. So congrats, Carolyn, and to your husband, Doe. Certainly an example that fairy tales do come true, it seems. Till tomorrow, good night.